type of nonsense. As live as they want to be from California, here's Sean and Jen.
Yep, it's time for Hyper Nonsense, the best podcast that you are going to hear for roughly the next 90 minutes.
Yep, that's us, all right.
Unless you decide to listen to anything else, including sitting in a dark room with no sound at all. But as long as you don't listen to anything else, it will be the best pod you hear. Welcome to Hyper Nonsense. We are the podcast that comes to you straight from the heart of California. How are you doing tonight, Jen?
Better than last time. I think I fought off the bronchitis.
Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting off tonight with my chair being extra squeaky.
Ooh,
this
fun.
Is a really exciting, fine new feature that we're going to add, furniture noises. So we want to be your premier pod for furniture sounds. I think that this is really just the universe telling me that I need a new chair.
That's possible. You tend to go through them and then get another.
One thing that I don't like is chairs. In terms of chairs that I need to use at my desk. Because the last couple that I've had, including this one that I've got now, just haven't really lasted. I don't know what happened to the quality assurance out of the Staples chair factory, because they're usually the Staples brand chairs that I get.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to be able to get one of these fancy, top-of-the-line, deluxe model chairs, but don't really have the budget for those. And I got into this habit about, not quite 10 years ago of every time I buy a chair from Staples, and I strongly recommend everyone do this. Get, especially if it's a chair with any kind of mechanical business in it, you know, this has the pneumatic thing and the chair can lean back and all the stuff. Well, if you get yourself a chair with all these crazy doodads in it, you should definitely get the two-year or three-year Staples chair replacement, because you will use it. I almost guarantee it. I've gone through at least, I would say, half a dozen of these chairs. And I've had them go out on me in short order the last couple times. Like, I think in under a few months, where the pneumatic system for, you know, moving the seat up and down just stopped working. And I realized that, you know, I wouldn't be described as petite in terms of my overall body size, but I'm not that big. I don't think I'm above the recommended operational weight for this kind of chair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so.
So
I have never looked to see if they have a operational weight.
Well, I'm sure that they do.
I mean, I don't know what that would be.
I'm sure that they do. But I mean, I'm 5'9 and I weigh approximately 230 pounds. You know, that's not, it's not incredibly overweight. You know, if I weighed 330 or,
well, that would be quite a difference.
430 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make a case for, well, sir, these chairs aren't rated to hold your weight. And that's why the pneumatic tubes go out on them and then they become creaky monster chairs. So I don't really know. This chair, I had the same thing, because I bought a fairly new chair less than a year ago and the pneumatic thing went out. And I had the coverage, so I said, okay, well, give me a new chair, Staples. And What they do is you do a thing. You either have to call them or do a thing online, and then they send you a gift card. And thankfully, this has gotten a lot better. They're all online now. So they just email you a thing you can print out, which is really nice because you used to have to wait for them to send a thing in the mail. And that one went out. So I went out and got this chair. And I would say within an even shorter amount of time, the pneumatic thing started going out. And I, you know, called up Staples and they sent me out the thing. And I started doing research online because I went, okay, well, there's got to be ways to fix this. I mean, it's not the most incredible problem that humanity's ever faced. So I found a couple of DIY fixes. One of them included putting a hose ring, you know, like if you've ever seen on the end of like a dryer or a washer hose, they usually have that ring for, you know, tightening up the connection. And one of the fixes was, we'll just get one of those and put it at the base of the chair. And it doesn't really work. I think it did for a little while, but then the chair started sliding down again. And I've gone back a few times and put the ring back on and retightened it. And it doesn't really stay. And the thing I really want to try is I would like to just, because all I want is I want the chair at the highest height that it will go. So it isn't like I need it to be set at a specific setting, or it isn't like, oh, I change it on a day-to-day basis. I never have this thing where I go, well, today having it at the highest setting is the most comfortable setting, but tomorrow I'll probably want it to be 4 inches lower. I don't really think that's how people use chairs. Now, I understand that there are environments where there might be chair sharing. Chairing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm like thinking more along the lines of an office or something like that.
Right, or a cubicle farm kind of place where, you know, it's not really your space. You just are there for a few hours, and then someone else takes that space and adjusts the chair as, you know, accordingly.
So another fix that I saw was you can just drill a hole. You know, you set it to the height you want, and then you just drill a hole in the, you know, in the tube, more or less, that goes all the way through, and then you just pin it. And I would love to try that, but I don't think I have a drill bit that's going to cut through this thing. And I figure, well, if I reach the point where I know for sure I'm just going to replace the chair, you know, if I can't fix it myself, I'm just going to be tired of dealing with the stupidity of it and just replace it, then I'll go ahead and take my drill to it and see what happens, because if I ruin it, well, I'm getting another one anyway. But I don't know at what level you have to get to with chairs for they don't suck. I mean, I'm assuming that there is a chair company out there that has nailed it. And they're like, we got the best primo chairs.
And they're probably really expensive.
Meaning I'll never have one.
Well, you never know, but not this week. That's for sure.
No, not this week, or probably this month or this year.
Yeah, that's true too.
Oh my God, with the coughing.
Yeah, deal with it.
Do you have something to drink over there?
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you're about to die.
I can't help that.
Have you been smoking?
Oh my God, I'd be dead if I were smoking. I can't even stand next to someone who's been smoking without coughing a lot more than that.
Have you been just going on long walks through fields of
pollen? I never leave the house anymore.
That is true.
Yeah.
I think at this point, let's just do a quick survey, because today's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think since we got groceries last Sunday that you've left the house.
I think you're right. No, I did. I went and talked to the neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah, you did. Was that, I feel like that was last week, though.
It probably was, yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I don't think what you're thinking happened this week. I think that was last
week.
It's
probably true, yeah. That's the only times I can think of that I've been outside.
So, how does it feel to just live your, you know, the majority of your existence either in front of your computer screen or in bed?
Well, that's how it is for now. maybe forever, depending on my health, you know?
Well, glad that your disability claim was denied.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, this is perfectly normal. Everyone feels like this all the time. Mm-hmm.
Well, listen, we have something really exciting to talk about. A week ago, I was not aware of this new social net called Ello, ELLO.co. And somehow in the last 3 or 4 days, this is all I've seen anywhere. Facebook, Twitter, people going, hey, I'm on this Ello. I'm so cool.
I've never seen anybody say I'm so cool. I've seen people say, I'm on this. I have invites. Talk to me if you want one.
Yeah.
I've had people say, I want one and I'm not on Ello and I want to be. And I've had people say, hey, I'm on Ello and it's really lonely here. How about y'all join? You know,
and
that kind of thing.
The thing about this Ello is if you go to their web, because it's a private beta right now, so you can only get in if you get an invite. And I noticed Laura of the sometimes occasionally happening Fly Swatter show podcast.
Yeah, I like her show. Even if she hasn't done it in a while, it was still good.
She has a tendency.
It was still good. Well, I stopped doing it inside my head and dropped it.
Pick
so,
it know. Up mm. sometimes during the pod pomo and then dropping it for the rest of the year.
Well, that's totally valid.
That's
you know,
fine.
Do
yeah,
what
I'm
you want to do.
You know, not criticizing her. I'm just saying that if anybody's listening to this and going, ooh, I want to check out the Fly Swatter show, you can.
Well,
just
there's
realize
stuff there.
There hasn't been an up in a while. But anyway.
Yeah, but we like
Laura
it.
Laura posted on the other socials that she had some invites, and I said, yo, give me some Ello, baby. So she sent me an invite, and I signed up. Now, the thing about this Ello is they're talking about, they've got this manifesto that they've put on their web.
Which you may have seen because people have been passing it around, too.
And the gist of it is they want to create sort of an anti every other kind of social net where there's no ads and you can just kind of be who or perhaps what you are, and they're not going to kind of use your information, or they're going to not kind of I
they're
want to
not going to
violate
be Facebook,
your privacy,
basically. Yeah.
But they're not going to harvest you and or your information as their product.
Right. And one of the first things I heard about this was that they don't require you to use your given name or your legal name. And this got a lot of attention because apparently Facebook has been requiring that lately. And the articles I've been reading are talking about a group of people who are drag queens. This is what they do. And this is the name that they're using on their Facebook, and now they're suddenly not allowed to. And why this is not okay, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that has kind of made people go, oh, well, Ello, you don't have to use your real name. So you could, you know, you could present yourself as whoever you are, you know, as a profession. You know, if you're a drag queen, you could go to Ello, use your drag queen name. Nobody's going to question you. You know, it's that kind of thing. So it kind of, I mean, there's a lot of people who don't want to be on social media using their real name. I don't care for me personally, but I know there's a lot of people that they would rather have a private name. You know, I mean, I know nothing on the internet is private, but still, you know, it's a separation between you outside of the internet and you on the internet or whatever. Like, I could see people who like to use the name they use for their main character in World of Warcraft go onto Ello and use their character name, you know, that kind of thing. But you know, that was a thing that made me first realize, oh, that's what Ello is. Okay.
Well, I signed up for this, and I will say that some of their wordage that they're using to describe themselves is not entirely accurate, because they're saying, oh, Ello is this beautifully designed social network. And I'll tell you this, it ain't. I think that the UI is weird, and it's definitely buggy.
Well, it's a beta.
It's a beta, so I'll forgive them that. But the idea that it's beautiful is a bit of a stretch. I think, like anything else, with some refinement, it could be better. I like that it's kind of taken some of the best things of different social nets. So you can, it's like Twitter in that you follow other accounts and they may or may not follow you back. So unlike Facebook, where you request a friendship and that person accepts or denies it, this is a situation where you can have kind of that one-way thing. And then Ello does something that can either be considered cool or perhaps deceptive, much like in the Google's Plus, where you can circle people and you have control over the circles that you place them in. Ello has two choices. You can add someone as a friend, or you can add them to another type of list called noise. The idea being, when you add someone to friends, they would carry, their updates would carry a little more value to you than if you just add them to noise. Now, I've only made about 4 connections, I think, and all of the people that I have voluntarily added, I've added as friends, and these are all people that I have some kind of pre-existing relationship with. So far, no one has just randomly added me.
Well, it's a small system still, so, and that'll happen eventually, where people just randomly add people and stuff, you know, as it builds. I think. I mean, that's kind of how things go with social media. Something starts small, then it gets bigger, then all the people that are in there for marketing purposes pop in and add everyone and automatically send them back a thanks for following me thing and, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, Ello is new, so it doesn't have that yet. It doesn't have enough people.
I'll say this. One of the things that happened with Twitter early on, and while I don't know what the official cutoff is for being an early adopter for Twitter, I was on it April of 2007.
Yeah, I didn't start until later.
I know that the majority of probably the first few hundred accounts that I connected with were people that I had really no pre-existing relationship with. And a lot of it was just, you know, people just kind of randomly added me. And because it was so small back then, you just kind of followed everybody back because you had nothing else to do. And I'm not seeing that kind of activity on Ello. And I don't really know. And it's funny because everybody who joins, their initial update is, well, I'm on Ello, now what? Because it's kind of like this thing that nobody really knows what to do with it. And in that way, it is kind of similar to how Twitter was in the early days. But I think Twitter, even within the first year that Twitter existed, it still kind of made a certain amount of sense if you got it and understood it. And I mean, Ello can be the same thing, but I just don't know what it's really going to turn into. And I don't feel super compelled to check into it frequently or use it a lot, and maybe that'll change over time. But ultimately, I kind of have this notion of, well, I don't really need another social net
to keep
track
of. Right, it's just another social thing. And I know I've been, like, you asked me, do I want an invite to Ello, because you have them and you can give them out. And I'm like, you know, I've been really kind of shrinking my social media lately. You know, I use Twitter and I use Tumblr. And I've been, you know, yesterday, I think I took out all of the politicians and or political organizations that I'd been following because, well, we have an election coming up in November and I don't think I can deal with what could occur between now and then with these websites and these types of, you know, entities on social media. So I unfollowed all of them because I just don't need it right now, you know. And with my Tumblr, I've been, when I started, I was very political. And now I don't go there as often as I first did. And I've kind of evolved to using it as a way to just sort of have another link to my writing, because my writing's all over the place. So, I mean, I put stuff into Tumblr saying, oh, here's a thing, so people can find it if they care. So I'm like revamping it you know, to that, and I'm deleting like 100 billion things that I stuck in there when I was, you know, angry and paying attention to politics. So I don't need another thing right now, you know, so that's why I'm not doing Elo.
Yeah, well, and now that I've actually used the thing, I can see how kind of sloppy the interface is and just kind of how weird it is. I don't think you should use it, because I think with the special and yet adorable limitations that
okay,
you
so
have,
you mean dyslexia is going to screw
well,
with me,
well, it's
right?
not just that. It's just, it's not, it's a very kind of cumbersome UI. It's just not that logical.
Well, that's going to mess with me. Then it took me a while to understand Tumblr because of the visual aspects.
Right.
If you change something visually, I have to relearn it. Seriously, like GarageBand would upgrade and look different, and I would have to relearn how to use it because it just, this is how my world goes. So if you're telling me that the interface is a little weird, it's probably just more than I need right now.
What I envision, if you actually joined Elo, is every time that you went to use it, I'd have to get on to help you navigate it.
Yeah, and for a while you would. Anything new like that.
Forever,
yeah.
probably.
Not, well, I don't know how bad is it.
Least,
I mean,
at least until they did some refinement of the UI, if they ever do. And then, of course, as this thing has been getting more and more publicity over the last week, there was an article that you pointed out to me earlier, which I'm going to link to in the show notes,
right.
about how they've got this seemingly rebellious manifesto.
Kind of, yeah. You know, the manifesto looks like, you know, here's this site you can go to that is free of advertisement, that isn't going to sell your data to advertisers and companies and corporations, that is there just to kind of be what people maybe wanted Facebook to be originally, you know, or something like that. It sounds very pure and very honest and very open. And the article that I found that I passed over to Sean kind of has a different take on that.
Well, what I gathered from it is that they have, in fact, the founders of Elo, they have, in fact, taken some venture capital. Now, in the course of startups in the tech world, they've taken a lot less money than a lot of other companies do. But anytime there's investors involved, then there's going to be some, at some point, there's going to be a push to make some money. And if you're not going to monetize through the traditional manners, aka ads, then you're going to have to charge. And I'm actually all for a fee-based social net that's really good, and right now, Elo ain't that. And it wasn't all that long ago that they tried this with app.net, which, to the best of my knowledge, if it hasn't officially folded, it's more or less considered a failure because it never really got the traction. I mean, I think that there's something to be said for a service that is incredibly useful that might be worth paying a couple bucks a month for if it really does all the things that Elo is proclaiming in its manifesto. But more importantly, for it to be useful, it's got to have most of the people on it that I want to stay connected with. I mean,
right. Either that, or it's got to have like exclusive, you know, content from, I don't want to just say famous people, but like specific famous people. Like, well, I think like if Neil Gaiman was on Elo and was writing little short stories, a lot of people would go, oh, okay. I'll pay to, you know, be able to read those, you know, just off the top of my head, you know. But other than that, I mean, okay, let's say a whole bunch of people that you like to stay connected with go to Elo. You're connected with them in like two or three other places anyway, right?
Right.
So what's the motivation to pay for it?
Yeah.
And to be clear, Elo is not charging right now.
Oh, no. No. And there's really no word yet from them what, if any, plans they have for the future. So it seems likely that there's one of two potential outcomes. And the first one is they burn through all their money and then they just shut it down and go, well, that was a fun experiment. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you on Facebook. Or they actually come up with a business plan. And if the plan is to not do like Facebook and Google, then they're going to have to charge. There's just no other way to do it.
I mean, they got to do something, you know. But the article was not about that exactly.
No, it was just talking about how they're trying to put it out there that they're some kind of un-startup company, you know. And the fact is, they are a startup company, but I'm saying un-startup in the sense that this is all bootstrapped and, you know, these guys are running it off a server that, you know, they borrowed from, you know, somebody else's server farm because one guy works over at Rackspace or something like that. It's not any of that. Yeah. I mean, they've got some venture capital. So
right. Well, the article was kind of saying, I mean, you were saying something, so go ahead with that.
No, go ahead.
Okay, well, the article, my understanding of it is the article was about, well, hey, they've got, you know, venture capital. And typically with venture capital, the way you get that as a startup is you start not by making a product, but by having an exit plan.
Yeah.
So you go to the venture capitalist person you want to borrow money from and you say, hey, I've got this thing I want to make. It's awesome. We need a bunch of money. And they say, well, what's your exit plan? How are you going to get out of there? And the idea is that, you know, ultimately what occurs, long story short, is you convince them to give you the money. You make the thing. In this case, the thing is Ello. And you have already plans in place to end it or to sell it or to leave or, you know, something like that. Not necessarily sell it to the company that you borrowed the money from, maybe, you know, but the idea is that, you know, you're starting this knowing that is not going to last forever. You don't really have plans to just sort of see where it goes.
Right.
You've got this exit plan already. And an exit plan could include selling it to a company who then will want to, you know, take your data and give it to, you know, and put a bunch of ads on there and all of the things that in this case you would have, you know, really not wanted. And that's what you joined because it didn't have those things, you know. So it's an interesting way to look at it, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm saying, where if you want to join Ello and try it out, that's fine. If you want to be on there all the time and love it all day and all night, that's fine, too. And just remember that because they have this idea right now, it doesn't mean that they're going to be able to hang on to it. And as far as that goes, if anybody does want an invite, well, let us know and I'll send you one. Just send an email to show@hypernonsense.com and or if you're connected to me, I have the invites.
Yeah, don't bother sending to me. I don't have any. So I can't give you one.
You know, through Twitter or anywhere else and that you know of, just let me know and I'll send you an invite. So enough about that. I got to tell this story. Earlier this week was my mom's birthday. And my mom lives in a town just north of here with my sister and her family. And I traveled up there because they were having just a little get-together in honor of my mom's birthday.
Right. And I didn't go because I was sick, which is always the case now. So he went on his own.
I took the bus up there, and my sister picked me up at the bus stop. And before we went back to her house, she had to stop by the police station because, as she told me on the way, her car that she normally drives, she was in a rental car, she had gotten into a minor car accident, and the car was at a body shop, you know, waiting to have some work done. Pretty normal thing. And, accident wasn't a big deal. Nobody got hurt or anything.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And she had this rental car, and she's telling me, well, she had to go to the police station because she found out that while her car that was in the shop was in the yard there overnight, a homeless person apparently broke into their lot and stole stuff out of 15 cars.
Oh, no.
This is the part of the story that to me is surprising, I guess, in that the repair shop didn't actually tell her this happened until she noticed because she had to, you know, she had dropped the car off and they kept it overnight and it was going to be there for a few days, which is why she had the rental. She went back to, she's got an iPod that she normally, you know, listens to music and stuff in the car. And she had left it in the glove compartment of the broken car and the car that had been left at the shop. And, I don't know, a day went by and she thought, well, it's going to be a few days before I get my car back. I want to have my iPod so I can still listen to it in the rental car. So she went to get the iPod, opened the glove box. It wasn't there.
Oh, no.
And her first thought was that maybe her husband had taken it and he just didn't let her know about that. So she called him and he didn't have it. So she checked with the shop and then the shop said, oh, yeah, we had a break-in. And some guy broke into 15 cars here and stole a bunch of stuff.
Oh, my God. So they didn't bother telling anybody. That's great.
And I thought to myself, that's just kind of weird. I feel like if I were the auto shop, you know, in the name of transparency, I would have told everyone who had a car there, you know, hey, we had a break in here and this is what happened. And I guess they were just going to try to stay low-key about it and wait to see if anyone happened to ask them about it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound quite legal. Don't they have to report those things?
I don't know that they have to. It just seems like their responsibility. Like the right
I mean, it's their, you know, they're holding the cars there. They're supposedly keeping the cars safe from damage and, you know, theft. I think that that's their responsibility to then report if they had a break-in. I think they're being negligent if they're trying to hide it.
The car place did one thing right in that they, you know, themselves reported it to the police, and the police apparently found the guy and he still had the majority of the stuff he managed to steal, which I gather, I mean, he got a few things, but he didn't necessarily get a lot, and he still had most of it on him when they arrested him. And they found out that, again, this was a homeless guy, that he was living on the roof of a strip mall.
Oh, my.
And I thought to myself, you know, that's kind of an ingenious way to hide yourself, because if you can get up high enough and back enough, and I'm sure that mostly he was just spending the nights up there. He probably wasn't up there all day long, because it seems like eventually someone would see him. If they wouldn't actually see him up there, they'd just see him coming, you know, going up or coming down.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is that, you know, he was going up there at night and then coming down in the morning. But that's, you know, they found him. I don't know if they found him up there or if they found him first and then he directed them to his makeshift living area or whatever. But luckily for my sister, she did actually get her iPod back.
Well, that's good.
You know, I went with her to the police station, and I've never been to the particular police station in this town before. And, you know, it was weird. We go in, and there's this little waiting area, and there's what I think would normally be, I wouldn't exactly call it a reception area, but there's a window where I think, certainly when they designed this police station, they had in mind that someone would be sitting behind that window possibly all the time. I don't know. And it's got a roll-up, you know, cover or whatever on the other side of the window. And it's rolled down, and there's a sign that says, if you need assistance, pick up the red phone. And there is a red phone on the wall, so my sister picked it up, and she told the person on the other end who, you know, who she was and who she was there to see. And I don't know, 5 minutes later, a guy comes up, he rolls up the shade on the other side of the window, and, you know, he brings out this brown paper bag, and he dumps it all out. And I'm sure my sister, in her report, had said, I am missing an iPod. And, you know, the guy dumps all this stuff out, and one of the things that comes out of the bag is an iPod, and my sister immediately goes, that's my iPod. So luckily, she got it back, and there was some other stuff in there. There was a GPS, and there was a whole big mess of wires and cables and stuff, and that was not my sister's. So she seems to think, at least as of Tuesday night that all that was taken from her was the iPod, and there was a few other small things that really couldn't be recoverable anyway. She said she had like some gift cards for a restaurant or something like that that she didn't seem to think were still there, but they weren't in the stuff that they picked up off the homeless guy. So either they weren't there in the car to begin with, or they're just gone and they're not going to come back. There's nothing to be done about that. You're not going to go to your insurance company and go, I want to file a theft claim against my gift cards.
Right, yeah.
So,
but at least she got the iPod back.
But yeah, the important thing is she got the iPod back. And it's good when these things actually work out in a nice way. And I was kind of surprised by the fact that it was easy as it was for her to get that iPod back. Because anytime I see a situation like this, I always flash back to years ago, my friend Ronnie had a guitar stolen out of his car. I mean, this was close to 20 years ago. And he was working at a KFC, and he had his guitar in the back of his car, and somebody managed to break in and steal it. And we went and filed a police report. And he filed a claim with his insurance, and finally they did a payout. They gave him a check. And within, I would say, a week, and I mean, it felt like this took months. I don't really remember exactly how long it took. But I would say within a week of him getting that check, I saw an ad, completely randomly, I saw an ad in the classifieds that someone was selling a guitar that fit the description of his. And when I first called him, I was just thinking, hey man, someone's selling a guitar like the one you had, and it's actually within your price range for what your insurance claim paid out. You should go check it out. And while I was on the phone with him, I thought, well, wait a minute. If it actually is your guitar, just play it cool, and as soon as you leave, call the police. Because he had a telltale scratch on it, right by, I think it was by the input jack. And there were a few other things that, you know, and it was a type of guitar that it wasn't like one of these, you know, Fender Squire Strats that are just everywhere. It was a, guitar players will know, an Epiphone Les Paul. And it just wasn't, while it wasn't hardly a unique, rare, vintage guitar, it just wasn't the kind of guitar that just anybody was going to have who decided, oh, I want to learn to play guitar, and then gave it up in 6 months. So turns out it was his guitar, and he went to the police, and they went and they picked it up, and they questioned the guy that had it, and he had actually bought it off someone else.
Oh, no.
So they did a whole investigation, and they eventually found the guy who had stolen it, and it went to court. And that whole time, his guitar had to stay as evidence. So it kind of sucked because, I mean, it was good because it looked like he was going to get his guitar back. But the part of it that sucked was he couldn't get it back until they went through the whole, criminal process. And we kind of needed him. You know, we had a band and we needed him to have a guitar. And he had just gotten the insurance settlement. And in reality, he could have just bought the guitar back and had the guitar and really had not been out anything. And as it was, because he called the police, he had to actually void the insurance claim.
Right.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess in the long run, the right thing happened because the guy who stole the guitar did get busted. But in the short term, you know, he would have achieved the same thing by just buying his guitar back. Nobody would have been the wiser.
Mm-hmm.
But I figured for sure, based on that experience, that if they were gonna, prosecute this guy, they'd have to keep any of the stolen stuff for evidence. And I realized that was, you know, for one thing, this case with the guitar happened in Illinois, so the rules may be different, and maybe, you know, the way evidence and everything works is just different. Maybe they could, and in fact, the guy, the police officer before he gave my sister's iPod back, he took a photo of it. So
they have evidence.
You know, that might be enough for a case like this.
Well, plus, I think a guitar would cost more than an iPad or iPod.
In this case, it probably would.
Yeah. Maybe there's a certain dollar amount that triggers the whole thing. You know?
Because, my sister is using what I guess would be coined now as an iPod Classic, even though I gather Apple has sort of unofficially discontinued those. So it's not like an iPod Touch. But it just kind of surprised me. I figured, okay, well, she's going to have to go in and identify it, and in 3 to 6 months after this thing goes to court, she'll get it back. But turned out not that way, so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I need to talk about this. We've been as part of our meager plan to improve our meager financial situation as it is, one of the things that we have been doing is we've been, trying to eat, get food out less, meaning cook
that
food at
home.
That
doesn't make sense.
More.
Try that again.
Well, just cook more at home.
Like buy groceries and then use them and eat them instead of going and buying like fast food all the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Which, like I said, I never leave. I don't really eat a lot out. I really don't.
And, I've been having some interesting adventures in cooking things. And really, kind of my approach is I sort of start with, well, what are some things that I like to eat? And can I recreate those? Or then sometimes I just survey what we have, and then I go to Google and I just start typing in the ingredients I have and seeing what kind of recipes I can find that match those ingredients. And I had this idea yesterday to make essentially some kind of it turned out to be a casserole. It wasn't really what I planned, but it just turned out that that was the best way to cook what I had. And what I was starting with really was just ground beef and rice. And I found a few different recipes that I liked. And then I found one that I thought would be good. And with a little modification, I made it. And I found the recipe on a website called Oh Sweet Basil.
You know, these food websites always have cutesy names.
Or as Gordon Ramsay would say, Basil.
Oh, right.
Yes. Oh, sweet Basil, where's the chicken? And I was reading over this recipe and this food blog web thing. And, a lot of times these sites, unless they're the kind that just sort of aggregate recipes, if it's one of these where somebody's really trying to say, I am a foodie. I am a cook. I am a chef.
Yeah.
I prepare food. I do not put lean cuisine into a microwave. I do not put cereal into a bowl. I craft meals with love for my family. And I am so nice to share with you my amazing techniques. Because
so, do you mean there are blogs that just sort of say, hey, I found this recipe here, and this is it, And then there's other blogs where they've got like all of these really well done photos of every step of the process, so you can see exactly how to do everything, and they've got like all of the every little detail about the instructions of this little portion you're looking at in that photo as you go, that kind of thing,
And it's
that's
like
a lot more work than just writing down a recipe.
It's like two or three paragraphs of, introductory things.
Yeah.
It's a little story about...
A little story will be something like, I'm doing this food challenge thing with the other bloggers, so here's my attempt. Or it'll be something like, this is a food that my relative used to make for whatever reason, mm-hmm. That they have a story for, and then you'll hear that story, and then they'll tell you how to make it.
Or it'll be more along the lines of, Autumn is in the air. The kids have gone back to school, and the days are turning more brisk. It's the time when you really appreciate a nice warm meal at the end of the day. And I know that when my family is hungry and it's time, you know, they're going to expect a well thought out, planned whatever meal with fancy photos. So I was looking at this recipe that had pretty much hit most of the key points I was trying to do. And while I consider myself to be a person of modest means as far as cooking, there's a lot I don't know. I don't know how to do. But I know enough that if you give me a certain set of instructions, I will probably be able to make something that's relatively passable. And this is one of those blogs that had all the fancy pictures, and you know, I just look at these photos and, you know, there's like this really nice deluxe cookware and all this.
Mm-hmm. Right. On a counter that's made of marble. Know, the whole deal. Or I guess granite. Granite's the thing now, right?
There just happens to be, you know, a seasonal selection of produce just kind of, you know, that I'm sure was, you know, painstakingly produced to look very casually placed, just sort of off the side of the photo, that kind of thing.
Right. And then there's a placemat underneath it that's just happens to, you know, pick up the colors of that produce that, you know, happens to fit fall or whatever they're going for.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of work.
Yeah. So I find this recipe and I'm just reading over it. And usually what I do is I just immediately scroll down to the bottom because that's where they have the actual recipe and the cooking instructions. I realize, okay, this looks like something I can make. But I go back up and I'm just double checking everything. And I see this phrase in the description and I about lost my mind. I posted this on Twitter and Elo for that matter. And Oh Sweet Basil actually put this in her food blog about this recipe. And what I was starting to get at earlier with a lot of these types of blogs is, you know, they'll usually have a picture of the person who runs the blog on there. You know, it'll be a nice kind of head shot, profile shot. Maybe it'll actually show them in a kitchen with an apron on or something like that. And it just seems like every time I find one of these, 9 out of 10 times, it's always kind of a mid, you know, early to mid-30s-ish white woman.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically is. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sweet Basil said this in the recipe. She said, "This casserole is something that, even as a food blogger, I totally love to eat."
Wow.
And I thought, well, now that this has the endorsement of a food blogger, I know it's got to be amazing. And then I thought, well, how many recipes has she posted that she doesn't actually like? Or is, you know,
like, right. Like, well, I
as
just,
a food blogger. As a food blogger.
Well, as a food blogger, I guess apparently she's too good to just put together casserole because that's simple. But this one is special somehow, I guess. I don't know.
I just, my mind reeled after reading that. I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad this has your endorsement as a food blogger. Hopefully it will. Hopefully, even with my unrefined palate, that is no stranger to a Carl's Jr. double Western burger. Even with my unrefined non-food blogger palate, maybe it won't be too complicated and I'll still be able to appreciate it.
Well, I guess, the thing that I'm getting from this is that casseroles are just not worth it. You know, like these are not worthy for food bloggers or something. You know?
I don't think that's the case. I just think, I mean, maybe, because the nice thing about a casserole is generally it's one of these, you just kind of dump everything into a pan and you come back in an hour and a half. And in this case, you know, and here's another example of what I'm talking about earlier. You know, she was talking about in this recipe, because it was, all I did was I browned some ground beef in a pan. And then I added all the other ingredients to the pan. I stirred it up a bit. And then I dumped it into a casserole dish. And I baked it for 90 minutes. And after I pulled it out, I put some cheese on top. And because it was still hot, the cheese just melted. I didn't have to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And her directions were, okay, brown it in the pan. And then take another bowl and put all these things in and mix those up. And then take another bowl. And then dump the contents of the mixed bowl into that bowl. And then the contents of the pan. And I'm like, you're crazy.
Why would you need the extra bowl to move it to?
Why do you need any of that? Why do you need any? Like, you don't need any of that.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I will say that if you're not browning the ground beef in a deeper, which I used a pan that was had that was deep enough that you could put stuff in it. So I realized that you could be using a more shallow pan, in which case that would not work. You would need at least one more bowl, but you don't need two more bowls.
Yeah, I don't understand that part.
And I see this in a lot of these blogs. And maybe I'm wrong and taking these extra steps makes everything awesome. Now, I will say this. About 3 weeks ago, I really wanted to make this cast iron skillet pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And that damn thing, I used every pot and pan I own to make that thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I looked at it and I went, okay, this will, first of all, the return that I wanted on this is that it would be a pizza Jen could eat.
Yeah.
And because it was specifically a gluten-free recipe to cook in a cast iron skillet, which seems like a weird way to make a pizza.
Well, if it was like a deep dish, I guess maybe.
But it really wasn't, and it wasn't aspiring to that. It's just you tend to think of a cast iron skillet more for cooking things on the stove
right.
than mm-hmm. putting them in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
And it even said in the recipe that, you know, if you were desperate, you could probably just do this on a pan, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought, well, like, the skillet seems intriguing. And by the time I was done, I had, you know, because I did everything. I made the crust. I made the sauce. I did everything. I did everything short of picking the vegetables and milking the cow. I did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was fine for what it turned out to be. It wasn't bad. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that my oven mitt does not protect my hands against 500-degree hot skillet.
Right. So then there's no reason to reproduce this recipe.
But
exactly
after,
that
I was
way,
done,
you know?
After I was done, I, you know, we don't have a very large kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And after I was done, I was like, I started with no dishes, and now every dish I have to wash.
Right.
I'm just
yeah.
like, this, it ain't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm all for trying different things, you know, cooking different ways, experimenting a little bit. But this was just insane, over the top, and unnecessary. And I understand that I will probably, as much as I, in my own way, I do love food, I will never join the ranks
of the,
of
food
the
bloggers.
Elite gourmet, of the food blogger.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
In a way, I hate to say it, but I probably skew on the food scale in a certain way. I probably skew more towards, you know, like, who's that guy that goes to the diners?
Guy
Ferretti?
Fieri.
Yeah. Him, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, we watched that show a couple times, and everything he did, you were
it.
Like, oh, wow, that's
I
really
just
good.
Can't. I couldn't. I'm so glad. If I had that channel, if I had cable and I had that channel, I would just be dead. I would be like,
because
he goes to, on that Diners, Drives, and Drive-Ins, Diners, and Dives show.
Something like that.
I mean, some of the stuff he finds, I mean, it looks really good, but I mean, it's like, it really is like some of it is the worst food, which is kind of the point of the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of saying, okay, yeah, we might have, you know, on whatever food network this is, we might have 10 hours a day of gourmet cooking shows, but we're going to do at least 1 or 2 hours a day where we're just going to take you out to some of the worst food that you'll ever find that is, I'm sure, amazing to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll probably take, if you eat it enough, it's going to take a few years off of your life.
Possibly, yeah. I can imagine. So, I remember they had one show where they had a guy that was not just barbecuing meat, but he had it in some kind of special cooker or something that was supposed to do something, you know, like it wasn't a slow cooker, but it something like that. But it was like a big, large barbecue looking thing. And that was kind of interesting because I'd never heard that people did that before.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. All right. People are doing that. But I don't care about food.
No, you don't.
So I can just look at it and go, oh, that's neat. You know?
Yeah.
And most of it I can't eat anyway. So, yeah, you know, it's neat to watch, but that's about it. But yeah, you kind of don't, you react differently than I do. I mean, I do write about food a little bit, but it's totally the opposite of these, like, oh, this is so good things. It's like, here is something that tasted pretty good that didn't kill me. Perhaps it won't kill you. You know, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm writing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So enough of that. Oh, I did have a couple other things I wanted to mention. First off, this is actually our 16th episode.
Oh, wow.
So that means, you know, as this goes out, that means we've actually, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of one episode a week, we've been doing this now for 4 months.
Oh, well, that works.
So I think we deserve one of these. I mean, it isn't like a milestone.
No,
it's just more about
just
the fact that, hey, we actually,
here.
We committed to doing this once a week and we managed it for 4 months straight. So,
which is pretty good for us, actually.
Considering our track record on the last couple of shows we've done, it is an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And a few episodes ago, I mentioned the Pod Dodo and the Pod Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And I said I need, you know, somebody to draw those. And Nathan actually did draw a Pod Dodo. If you follow at Hyper Nonsense on Twitter, you may have seen that.
It's awesome. But, it is so cool.
So thanks to Nathan for that. And I will put that in the album art for this episode. So going on from there, we have a little bit of feedback to go over. If you could please read that.
Okay, so this comes from Van Sunder, and I think this one is in regards to the what turned into a rant I was doing about the six Californias.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so this is what he writes. I can make an argument for carving up California into six pieces. You can live in the statelet that fits your politics. So if you're tired of the red part of the state affecting your everyday life, or the blue if that's your issue, then pick the statelet that is right for you. Of course, after looking at the splitting of the state proposed, I think it already aligns pretty well to do that without most people even having to move. As for healthcare, I'm sure they could figure out how to make it work as least as well, poorly, as it does now. Can you tell? I had to go through that whole process myself recently. Yeesh, if only they could hire people with actual computer and business skills to run these things. So that's one of his comments.
Uh-huh. And I was thinking about that, too, because if you... I mean, it's kind of known that if you look at where the political pendulum swings in the state of California, that the closer you get to the ocean, the more liberal it gets, and the further you get inland, tends to be a lot more conservative, with certain pockets in between the bigger cities. So he does have a point there. I also like the term statelet.
Yeah.
I feel like
that
should be...
It's a little state. It's a statelet. Is Rhode Island a statelet? It's little.
That should be if, you know, somebody had... If somebody had, like, a really popular political blog, and then they just started, like, a Tumblr. You know,
oh, yeah.
The Tumblr could be the state.
So your blog could be the state. The state of the state of whichever state you're
right.
in. And then, yeah, your Tumblr would be the statelet. And it would have things like, hey, we just talked about this awesome issue. Go over here and read it. You know.
And I'm going to point out, you know, Van Sunder and his wife, Tolly, they have a recent clinic that they opened up in the Monterey area. So he has had the experience of dealing with the healthcare stuff on the other end that maybe most of us haven't.
The business aspect as well, yeah.
And while I support ostensibly the Affordable Care Act and the reforms that it has made into reality, and, honestly, if you ask me, it's not enough. I mean, let's just face it. I just want universal health care like they have in countries that are sane about it and do it that way. That's what I want. So there you go. I do not want to turn this into a big long thing. But if you ask me, it's a stepping stone to hopefully get to what we need. The problem is it's a new thing and the government doesn't really entirely know how everything works yet. And just having had the experience of using it as a consumer, going back to when the healthcare exchanges went online, it is problematic.
So and it's kind of in beta right now, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of in public beta, and we can only hope that
you know, all the feedback that people are giving will make it improve. You know, that's kind of how betas work. That's the way I see it. It's
whatever,
a beta.
Whatever side you're on. And while, again, I do support it, I'm not going to shy away from being critical of it. And yeah, it was really rough going there for the first few months, and it has improved as the year has gone on, and hopefully as more years go on it will get better.
Right. So, but like the parts that people are mad at though seems to be the tech aspect where you have to connect up to the website and not necessarily the plan itself, you know, like the way things are. You know, it's the tech aspect that's driving people nuts.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, if you look at it, maybe this is a beta, they can theoretically work out the tech in the future.
Right.
We hope. He's got another comment here. His comment is from, I don't know if it was the same show.
The last show.
Okay. The last most recent show. He says this, I like the guest appearance by Siri. Don't give her Jen's job, though. Okay? Thanks. And that's from Van Sunder. Thanks, Van Sunder, for trying to save my job. But yeah, I guess days where I'm just too sick to do this that, you know, maybe Siri can make an appearance for a while. I don't know.
Well, I did actually respond to that comment on the website, and I said, so far, that Apple has not provided the $25 application fee to become the new co-host of the show. So until then, Siri's got no chance.
Yeah.
Now, we've been asking people to leave us iTunes reviews, which if you go to hypernosis.com/iTunes, it'll just shunt you straight over to our listing in the iTunes store. And we've been reading those as they've been coming in. We've been relying on a service called ReviewCast, which itself, as apparently everything else, is a beta service. And it's pretty simple. You just put in some basic information and it pulls all of the iTunes reviews it can find and then it emails them to you. This is handy for those of you that don't know about the specifics of iTunes reviews, because Apple, in its wisdom, breaks down the iTunes store by country, and there are a lot of countries. So that means when you leave a review, it's only available to the country that you're signed in on. So if I go to look at our listing in iTunes on my own account, then I can only see reviews that were left in the U.S. unless I specifically go in and look at other countries. And ReviewCast claims that it will send me the reviews from any and all countries. I don't actually know for sure that it's done that, because I know for a fact all the reviews we've read have been from people in the United States. So if you have left us a review...
Actually, I know someone has.
Oh?
From Australia.
Oh, okay. See, I haven't seen that one yet. I don't know how long ago they posted, but what I'm getting at is...
I don't think it was incredibly long ago, but yeah.
What I'm getting at is I went to log into ReviewCast to check for reviews for this show, and the service was down.
Oh.
And because it is a beta service that was very basic, I don't know if it's coming back. So just hang in there if you've left us a review and we haven't read it. We'll do our best.
And it wasn't on the United States one. Then your thing that you were tracking them with went down. But there is one. So we'll have to track that down and put it in the next show.
Mm-hmm. All right. So even though we haven't read it yet, if you've posted one recently, just bear in mind that we'll do our best to find it. And, you know, if nothing else, if you have posted it, just take a screenshot and email it to us, show@hypernonsense.com. We'll gladly read it because this is one of those things. And, you know, people have found different workarounds for this whole, you know, iTunes reviews separated by country thing. And, you know, one of the service solutions that's out there is something you actually got to pay for. And I don't really want to pay for it. Not because I think it's a bad service, but because I just have something I feel like spending money on. So anyway.
Yeah, but there's one. I know about it, and it will get read.
And just as a quick announcement, if you're listening to this show, just say on the website, we have a full slate of subscription options. You can go to hypernonsense.com/subscribe. Everything's there. iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, and just a plain RSS feed if you have a different system you want to use. And we also have a subscribe by email option where anytime we post a new show, you will get an email update. And, you know, that's all free. And we don't harvest your emails.
No, why would we bother?
It's actually done through a third party that, as far as I know, they're not harvesting your emails. And that is the only email you get through that. You'll only get show updates. We're not going to
spam you. We're not going to send you anything else. Because honestly, really, why? I mean, once you start spamming people with a bunch of stuff that they don't want, that they didn't actually intend to sign up for, you start losing people. So why would we do that? You know? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Speaking of other countries, I have 7 international names for American products.
Oh, goody.
This article says, while available around the world, American products aren't always called by their red, white, and blue names. Companies have to adapt various languages and cultures, and what works stateside doesn't always translate. Here are 7 American goods with unfamiliar international names. 1. Hungry Jack's, Burger King in Australia.
Oh.
In 1971, Jack Cohen bought the Australian franchise for Burger King from Pillsbury Company, which owned the chain at the time. But because the name was already registered, he used his name, Hungry Jack, originally an American pancake mix.
Right,
instead.
Yeah.
In 1999, Burger King began opening restaurants under its own name in Australia, but they combined with Hungry Jack in 2003. This one I particularly like. Doritos Cool American, which is the name for Doritos Cool Ranch in Europe.
Hmm.
So if you go to a store in America, it's just Doritos Cool Ranch. But if you go to Europe, it's Doritos Cool American.
Okay.
One of the most popular Doritos flavors in the U.S. is Cool Ranch. However, in many parts of Europe, the flavor is known as Cool American because Europeans often call ranch sauce American sauce.
Oh, this makes perfect sense now. Okay.
Coca-Cola Light is known as Diet Coke in Europe. Diet Coke is called Coca-Cola Light throughout Europe. The soft drink is exactly the same as its American counterpart, but the word light is associated more with lower calorie items in Europe than diet. And that's what I always thought. I thought the Diet Coke in the Europe's was just, well, I mean, I should say Coca-Cola Light was just Coca-Cola as we know it with lower calories, not the actual Diet Coke as we know it. But apparently,
so it sounds
that's
like it's the same thing, just a different name, right?
For some reason, TJ Maxx in Ireland is referred to as TK Maxx.
Why?
The American department store TJ Maxx is known as TK Maxx in Ireland and throughout the UK. Its parent company, TJX Companies, renamed it so Irish and British customers wouldn't confuse the store with the established retailer TJ Hughes.
Oh, okay.
This is a good one. 5, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese, as we know it here in the U.S., is simply called Kraft Dinner in Canada.
I had heard that. Mm-hmm.
In Canada, Kraft Macaroni and Cheese is known as Kraft Dinner or simply KD. Kraft introduced the product as Kraft Dinner in both Canada and the U.S. in 1937. However, in the late 50s, Kraft added the words macaroni and cheese to its packaging of Kraft Dinner when the term gained more prominence. It wasn't until the 70s that Kraft Canadia started using bilingual labeling, French and English, on all packaging. As a result, Canadian Kraft products included the words Kraft Dinner in a bigger and bolder font on one side of the box, with Diner Kraft on the other side. The words macaroni and cheese were in a smaller font, so Canadians adopted it as merely Kraft Dinner.
That makes sense.
Ooh, this is good.
What?
Mr. Clean in Germany is, this might be my favorite from this list. Mr. Clean in Germany is known as Meister Proper.
Meister Proper?
Yeah. Procter & Gamble's Mr. Clean is a global product, so its name is translated into various languages, including Maestro Maestro Limpio in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Maestro?
That's what it says.
How's it spelled?
M-A-E-S-T-R-O space L-I-M-P-I-O.
That means teacher.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
Mr. Teacher Clean?
In Mexico, Monsieur Propre in France, and Meister Proper in Germany. It's the same product with the sailor mascot as it is in the U.S.
Oh, that's so strange.
And finally, Lay's potato chips are known as Walker's Potato Crisps in the U.K.
Well, that's, yeah.
Founded in 1948, Walker's quickly became the U.K.'s leading potato crisp snack food company. However, Pepsi acquired Walker's and rebranded it with the Lay's logo and products in 1989. The snack food is exactly the same, but PepsiCo decided to keep the Walker's name to ensure customer brand loyalty in the U.K. Walker's also has more exotic flavors than its American counterpart, including American cheeseburger, lamb and mint, and South African sweet chutney. Wow.
Oh, those are different.
American, you know, cheeseburger.
Talking about the different chip flavors, right?
Yep.
Or crisp flavors, I guess, as you would. I know, like, I think Lay's now has, is it Lay's that has, like, all these weird flavors? And I'm writing on a website called Bubble and reading a bunch of people's stuff, and they're from all over the place. And it depends on where you are, what flavors got released to your country.
Okay.
Like, not all of them got released. Like, I think there's a cappuccino one here. And at least one person from Canada reports that she doesn't have that one.
Okay.
And she got, like, a cinnamon one instead.
Weird.
Or something, you know. And it was, like, it was during a run where they had, like, three flavors that they'd produced and released in two different countries. And then they wanted input as to which one people thought was the best or something like that. But, yeah, like, where you are kind of depended on what got released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. I know that I'm not trying any of those, so.
No, I can't. So I've been reading people's reviews of them because I want to know what they taste like, and I can't eat them. So now I know what they taste like. You know, there's a salt and pepper one in somewhere, right? And a writer on Bubble described it as having the flavor of the devil's armpit. So she did not like that one at all.
Well, this is all I know. I'm not 12 years old anymore. I don't need everything to have whimsical flavors. I remember in junior high, this was when the Crunchers brand potato chips came out, spelled with a K, of course. And I don't know if those things still exist or if they've morphed into something new. But at the time, when they were brand new, they had a jalapeno flavor.
I remember that.
And the thing to do in junior high during lunch was to get yourself a bag of Crunchers jalapeno and see if you could eat it all without drinking anything.
Oh, that's weird.
That was always the challenge that we would throw down. You know, somebody would go, yeah, I dare you to get a bag of jalapeno Crunchers and eat the whole bag without taking a drink. And inevitably some dumb kid would try it.
See, that's kind of funny because, like, where I grew up, if the same chips were available, people would be eating them like no big deal because we had a very high Mexican population, as in people had come right over from Mexico, you know? So jalapenos were normal, you know? Yeah. I used to be able to eat jalapenos straight when I was younger. I can't anymore, but I could when I was younger. I remember kind of a funny story. My friends, they knew that I ate Mexican food and they didn't really think anything of it, but some of their cousins didn't know. And I remember one time somebody thought it'd be funny and they said, oh, here, try this pepper. It's not hot at all. And then here, I'll give you some water too so that if it's too hot for you, you can just drink the water. And it was a jalapeno and I'd eaten jalapeno. So I was like, this is no big deal.
And the cousin kind of got disappointed, and my friends were like, yeah, big deal. Of course she can do this, you know. And he said, well, drink the water, drink the water. And the water turned out to be vodka, which I was fine with. So, I mean,
okay.
He just looked at me like, that didn't work. Yeah. But now I don't think I could eat the jalapeno now. But it's not because I'm allergic. It's because the spices of it really mess with my sinuses. And my sinuses already have enough problems. So I don't need that.
Yeah.
But I could do the vodka still. Anyway, so I mean, it's funny that your group was like, eat the whole bag, you know. It's just funny, you know.
Yeah.
And the other thing, when I was teaching, the kids would come to school with little tiny containers, like spice containers, you know, the little tiny ones, the smallest ones, of chili powder. And they would put it on their food.
Okay.
And sometimes they would just eat the chili powder, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'd be passing that around and everything, and you know, no one thought that was strange. That was normal. So I think if your group did that, you know, where my group was, you'd be looked at funny. Like, why can't you eat the whole thing?
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of funny.
All right. Well, my voice is trying very hard to leave me, so I think it's time to end the show. Unless you got anything else to add?
Mm-mm, no, I'm
okay.
Good.
Let me enjoy a cool drink of water.
Trying to get his voice back, right?
Watery.
Watery, good. It's good when your water is watery and not, I don't know, oily or something. Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Hypernonsense.com is the web of choice.
Is your voice going to make it? Holy cow. Your voice really is leaving you. It's running away.
Thank you, Nathan's outro music while I clear
cough
my throat.
Up along. Yeah. Wow.
Hypernonsense.com is our web of choice if you want to find everything out about our show. You can leave us comments for this show or any past show. We would love to hear from you. You can also email us, show at hypernonsense.com. You want an LO invite, hit us up. We'll send you one back.
Actually, just talk to Sean because I don't have any.
Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at Hypernonsense. Hypernonsense.com/support. If you want to help us out, you can see all the ways to do that there. If you'd like to make a contribution in terms of monetarily wise, we've got options there for PayPal and Square Cash and Bitcoin. Our P.O. Box address is there, so if you'd like to mail us a letter,
you could.
You could do that. Or other cool things. Maybe you got a vintage bag of Crunchers jalapeno potato chips that you haven't figured out what to do with over the last 20 years.
Yeah, then you could do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks everybody for listening, and if all goes well, we'll be back with you next week.
Bye, people.